So God rested here, it says. Sorry, for anybody that listens to this downstream, I forgot to hit start on time. But we're in Genesis chapter 2, and we're in verse 2. But it says there that God rested from all his work. It was complete. We go over to Isaiah 40, verse 8, and we see what? Did God need to rest like we might need to rest?
No.
No, he didn't need to revive himself. He didn't need to be replenished. He didn't need to be re-strengthened. God doesn't have that issue. Go to Psalm 121, 1 through 4. Psalm 121, 1 through 4. So who's the one that keeps Israel? Does he take a nap?
No.
No, God is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week God. And it's interesting how I just said that. We'll come back to that a little bit. So verse 2, continuing, it says, on the seventh day, and again it says then, he rested, there at the last part of the verse, from all the work which he had done. We're re-emphasizing this work was all done and God stopped and he was done. Is it just a stop? Well, no. We can go back and look at verse 31 of chapter 1 and realize that God didn't just stop and go ambivalently, okay, I'm done. No, he looked at it. He received joy. He looked at it and said, this is very good. And good might probably means a lot of things there. One is we would look at it, particularly if we could have lived in the time between the end of creation and the fall of man, particularly comparative to the time we live in after the fall of man and a cursed creation, but if we could have lived in that time, we would have said, and it's very good, wouldn't we? And so God looks at it and he can recognize that. He's like a master craftsman looking at a masterpiece completed and seeing that it's good. And so that takes us to verse 3. This is going to be a short class, isn't it? We're already down to verse 3. No, it won't. But anyway, verse 3. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. Okay, what does it mean he blessed this seventh day? So we're in the seventh day, clearly. Clearly God is resting in it. He has stopped his work. And so we get to that word, he blessed it. And so when you look back at the meaning that would come out of the word behind that, here are some things that I read. To kneel or to cause to kneel, that's a blessing, all right? So this is might be a little bit blessed, different kind of word than we might typically think of to say God bless somebody. That's going to mean he gave him some good thing, some good health, some good relationship, some restoration, some forgiveness, whatever. But this has a little bit different flavor to it. He blessed it means another one would be to praise or salute. That would be a good interpretation or a good translation of this word. Or to adore or be adored. So do you get the feel? God is looking at this seventh day and making it special in the sense of looked upon with a sense of praising or saluting or adoration of this day. So what do you think this means that he blessed it? How did he bless this day?
Well, he blessed the completion. He didn't necessarily bless the fact that it was a seventh day.
Oh, yeah. It says right here, he blessed the day.
I realize that, but God blessed physical entities as much as his own creation. He blessed his creation.
Well, I'm not going to argue with the text.
I said, well, he blessed it as it's holy.
Okay, and so let's go ahead and look at that next word a little bit. And he sanctified it. That word sanctified, we've run into that before. It's set apart. There's literally, if we were looking at the Greek word, we're not. This is Hebrew, right? But in the words, the sanctified word that comes across in Greek actually is a word that means to cut off or to cut. Idea of a sharp knife severing something. Well, that seems a little bit weird, right? But it means it to cut off, to set apart for a purpose. It's that separation of the holy from the not holy, from the purposeful to the not purposed. So it's set apart, consecrated. Another word would be hallowed, which probably needs its own definition. But that lines up with to make sacred or majestic or holy. So God has taken this seventh day and made it special. He has sanctified it. And an interesting thing about the root, because if we go back and look at the word, when the New American Standard tried to translate it, and I say tried, not like they did poorly, but it's hard to bring it all together because it says, verse 3, God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. There's really, when you get to that word sanctified, there's two parts of the meaning in that, if you go back to the root of it. And one part of it is that he made it. So God made the seventh day holy. It also conveys the term declared, and he declared it holy. So he made it holy in that he set it aside, he intended it to be, and then he declared it holy, that for any that would hear and understand that this is a special day. And so God has set this seventh day aside to glorify himself and what he's done, but also just as its own specialness going forward. So what else would you say about what God has done with this day? How would you say he blessed it and sanctified it?
Perfect.
What's that?
Perfect.
Well, it is a perfect day. Yeah, God did that. You are cleverly, carefully avoiding what's to come, right? Does the seventh day take on some meaning later on in Scripture?
Yes.
Uh-huh. In what way?
He blessed it.
Well, he blessed it, but what?
That's a day of worship for all of his creation.
A day of worship?
My
the Sabbath and the law. And the...
It shows up in the law. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy, for the seventh day he rested. Okay. We're going to look at for some understanding about all of that, because it creates an interesting situation and question that we will get to. Before we do that, I want to talk about the three aspects of creation here that's happening on this, that for which the seventh day is the pinnacle. There are three things in there that are huge, and it's repeated several times, and we're going to talk about that and look at it. But in this seventh day, we are celebrating or recognizing or documenting completion of the work, and that he rested, and that he did the blessing and the sanctification of that seventh day. So the verses we're reading do those three things if you go back and look at the verbs as they're put there. So there's some repetition in here, and I want to take a quick look at that. There's a repetition in these three verses about God having done the work and completed the work. And if you look at that in verse 1, it starts out with one reference to it says, the heavens and the earth were completed. If you look at verse 2, you actually get three mentions of it. By the seventh day, God completed his work that he had done. So it's done, he did it. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. So, you know, we're getting a lot of repetition about God being done and resting, and God did it, it's completed, it's whole. When you get down to verse 3, God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it because in it he rested from all his work. So he's done, he's resting, he stopped, and had created and made it. So there's quite an emphasis here in Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, indicating that it is done. Done to the point that he is able to stop and say, there it is. I don't have to create in this manner anymore. And then another repetition here is the rest part. We don't see it in verse 1, but in verse 2, we see, verse 2 and 3, we see three connections with resting or stopping on the seventh day. Verse 2, God completed his work which he had done, and he rested from all his work which he had done. Verse 3, God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all of his work which he had created and made. So the resting is repeated several times. So when you see that repetition, even more in Hebrew than maybe some other languages and communication, repetition is get the point, get the point, get the point, get the point. And certainly we believe that Moses wrote the book as God directed him to. There's a lot of repetition here, and so the point is it's done. And so now we get to hear more of the details that will come later in this chapter. So I want to ask this general question. What do you see as the theme or themes of these three verses? A little repetitive from what I just said, but let's ask the question anyway. What do you see as the themes here? When you read this and you go, what's the message to the reader?
God did something for a purpose.
God did something and it had a purpose, okay?
That it was completed.
It's complete. It's done. What else?
He made it.
What's the it?
He was the one. He made it. He created it.
God did the creation, yes.
Not man. No.
Not man, right?
Rested.
And he rested. There's one more that I pulled out.
That he blessed it.
He blessed that seventh day of rest. Okay? Now, I want to go on the other side of that. You know, it's always interesting to look at what's there. There are some very interesting things that aren't here. So, anybody want to look and see, or there's some things that you go, hey, yeah, that's interesting. Look, here's something that's not here that I think might have been if I looked at the pattern of the other scriptures and what's coming later and all kinds of stuff.
He didn't say that it was good.
Well, that's true.
He blessed it.
He did bless it, so there's some implication, but he didn't come right out and say it.
He sanctified that day.
Well, that's what he did do.
But that's a big part, though.
It is.
Because I think
But I'm looking for what's not written here that might surprise you.
At this point, he hasn't said to keep that day holy.
There are no instructions for mankind in this passage. Now, it's coming, right? And we're going to talk about that. But there, when we see God rested here and he sanctified the day, I mean, he gave instructions to Adam about what to go eat, right? You can eat the green plants and the trees bearing fruit. Da, da, da. He gave, go be fruitful and multiply. He gave some instructions, but he didn't give any instructions written down here to his recently created mankind for the Sabbath day of rest. Do you even see the word Sabbath here?
No.
Okay.
Do you think he foreordained it, though? I think he already knew.
Well, God knew what was coming.
Yeah, and so he sanctified, he blessed that.
He blessed the day.
With the idea of what was to come.
But and God certainly knew what was coming, but there's no instructions to man here. He did not establish this by the words we see here as anything that man was supposed to react to. For mankind, I mean, he knows God rested, and maybe he would choose to celebrate. I don't know. But there's no instruction from God here for mankind about this day. Okay?
So mankind has an afterthought.
What's that?
So we were an afterthought?
Well, no. And we're going to talk about that. Well, how does this Sabbath day come up later on? I think it's something we have to think about. Because there are groups today, right, that will tell you if you're not worshiping on the Sabbath, if you're not resting on the Sabbath, you're sinning. Well, is that true or not? And it's clear in the scriptures how to react to that. And we're going to look at that. Before we move on, what's that?
Is it because of the law had not been established?
I'm going to show you the first time Sabbath shows up here in just a second. I want to make note of one more thing that's not written here that you might think about. Yes, sir.
Well, he doesn't indicate any intentions for things like salvation or any intentions. It's done. He's made it.
Yeah, well, and for that matter, is there a need for salvation yet?
No.
Salvation is not even a necessary thing. Man hasn't fallen yet. Okay? The one other thing I want to mention here that's not in here, that's in all of the other 6 days, it was evening, it was morning, and it was a day. Now, what's the significance of that? I don't know that we ought to make any too much significance about it, but here's a question I want to ask you that relates to it. So what happened on the eighth day? Well, no. Yeah, I mean, as far as the theme that we're talking about here in Genesis, creation's done. God's resting started on the seventh day, and he took that seventh day and he blessed it. But the eighth day is going to look like the seventh day, and the ninth day is going to look like the seventh day in terms of the actions that God is taking toward creation. Now, God's rest is going to be interrupted, isn't it? What's God's rest going to be interrupted by? Man's sin and man's fall. And we're going to get into that in chapter 3, so we're not going to borrow that here. But my point is, God's week didn't start over. He didn't go back to work in creation on the eighth day, or the ninth day, or the tenth day.
What about the 14th day?
Well, It's not here. Okay.
So when did he make men and women? Because
he did that on the sixth day. That's already done. He even told them at the end of what we studied last week, go out and be fruitful and multiply. He's not going to say that to a lone Adam walking on the planet, is he? So we're going to get the details of all that coming up in chapter 2. It goes back and looks back at how that came to be because it's very significant for the world going forward. So they take a look backward beginning in verse 4. And it says this is the account. That's how verse 4 starts. So I'm going to save that for another day.
So Adam and Eve was created on the sixth day.
That's right. And we're going to get a reintroduction to that. So we've already talked about it. There's a significance that's coming to day 7 for mankind. Let's look at Exodus 16, 4 through 7 and 22 through 24. Exodus 16, 4 through 7 and 22 through 24. I'm taking you to the very first passage in the scriptures that uses the word Sabbath. The law has not yet been given at the point we're reading here. So they don't already have a command to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. But this is the first time that we have a mention of the Sabbath and some direction from God about the Sabbath. So if somebody would read Exodus 16, 4 through 7, then 22 through 24.
Whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. So Moses and Aaron said to all of the people of Israel, at evening you shall know it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he heard your grumbling against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us? And then
22 through 24.
On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, this is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake, and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over lay aside to be kept until morning. So they laid it aside till the morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink, and there were no worms in it.
So, in the instructions about the manna, for the first time, mankind is told, okay, gather twice as much on the sixth day, because on the seventh day, you're not going to go out and gather. And this is the first time that God says to give instructions to man, he does it through Moses, that the Sabbath is a special day, you're going to remember it and keep it holy. That's the first time. Think about all the history that has occurred between Genesis 1 and Exodus 16. A lot of history. Abraham, the flood, and you can just keep going until we get to the time that the Israelites are leaving Egypt. Yes, sir.
If they didn't have a repetitive week, how did they know what the first day was?
Well,
so they knew how were the seventh.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because we don't have anything in the scriptures that tell us where the 7 day week came from. But we certainly have Genesis 1 that lets us see this 7 day pattern. And I would guess, I would expect, we clearly see all the way through the scriptures that they had 7 day weeks. And we can see through history of mankind 7 day weeks. Even nations that don't run the same calendar we do, you can talk about China and whatever. The whole world runs on a 7 day week.
The moon.
And the whole world operates on the same situation on years. And if you remember back when it talked about establishing the lights, it said these are going to establish your seasons and your times and all that. Now, it's purely conjecture to say this. I'm not going to stand on this and say has to be, but I would say from whatever we can see, it probably the world ran on a 7 day week from the beginning. And did the people take note of that seventh day? I mean, we don't know what they did, but it certainly looks like they had a 7 day week to start with. And everything in ancient times, this is how it worked. Why wasn't it a 10 day week? I mean, we're base 10. The only reason we're base 10 in our thing, we think it's so natural to work in base 10. You know, we could have been base 7 people, we could have been base 14 people, we could have been whatever. That's just what evolved as the standard thing, and it fits in with our numbering system.
So what happened on the eighth day?
They just went about their business. I think that's just what you'd have to say. So let's go over and look at where it becomes a command. Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. This is the command that's given to the people of Israel in the Ten Commandments.
Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates.
Okay. So we get the clear command. It's introduced as a concept when he brings the manna. Now when we get the Ten Commandments, here it is, and you're not going to work, and it's pretty clear. So what was the point of the Sabbath? Okay, certainly God was done with creation. It emphasizes creation. It's a reminder of creation. God rested. Many would say it's probably also a reminder of the fall. God created this wonderful world in 6 days, and it was good for you. But now we live in a fallen world, and your hope for coming out of that is obedience. Let's talk about signs of covenants. Oh, I skipped a passage. Exodus 31, 12 through 17. This is really important for our understanding of what God is establishing in the Sabbath. Exodus 31, thank you for asking. Exodus 31, 12 through 17.
Afterward the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak thou also unto the children of Israel, and say, Notwithstanding, keep ye my Sabbath, for it is a sign between me and you in your generations, that ye may know that I, the Lord, do sanctify you. Ye shall therefore keep the Sabbath, for it is holy unto you. He that defileth it shall die the death. Therefore, whosoever worketh therein, the same person shall be even cut off from among his people. 6 days shall men work, but in the seventh day is the Sabbath of the holy rest of the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day shall die with death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, that they may observe the rest throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, and in the seventh day he ceased and rested.
So, what is one of the main purposes, or maybe even the main purpose, for this commandment to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy according to what God said, as we see here in Exodus 31?
Remember God.
Rest.
Be refreshed.
It's a sign. That's its main purpose. It's a sign. Now, it acknowledges in that sign the things that you all just said. But it is the event to remind the people that God made it in 7 days.
He is the Lord.
He is the Lord, and he's saying, this is a sign, and who is the sign for between me and
Israel?
This is a covenant sign. If you go to the covenants, what was the sign of the covenant with Noah? There are actually two covenants with Noah. I'm speaking of one of the two. What was the agreement with Noah?
Rainbow.
What's that?
The rainbow.
The sign is the rainbow. What was the covenant? I'm not going to destroy the life on the planet by the flood again. God had a covenant with Abraham, right? I'm going to make you a great nation. What was the sign of the covenant with Abraham? Some of us might hesitate
Isaac.
To say it out loud. What?
Isaac?
No.
Circumcision. Oh, yeah.
That was the act that he asked of Rainbow, of Adam and his Adam, of Abraham and his descendants. We are now looking at what we call the Mosaic Covenant. And the sign of the Mosaic Covenant, the remembrance part that comes out of the Ten Commandments, is remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Okay? Questions? Comments? This is more of a sign than a moral issue. When you look at the rest of what you see in the Ten Commandments, it's moral issues. Idolatry is an immoral act, right? You can go down through the list, but this one is held out as a sign, less moral and more significance as a sign to keep things going forward. So now, how does that apply to us as Christians? Is that for us? Well, we're going to manage our time carefully. Doesn't mean be quiet. That just means work with me on managing the time. There are basically three approaches taken amongst, I'm going to use the word believers, but people who take the name of Christ. You've got one group we would call Sabbatarians. Some of you may know Seventh-day Adventists. I want to be careful. When you paint with a broad brush, you can mess things up. But I've got a brother-in-law who's a Seventh-day Adventist. And some of what I would say here, he goes, that's not what my group believes. So let's just realize that not every Seventh-day Adventist approaches everything the same. But of the ones that really implemented Seventh-day Adventism, Ellen G. White and her followers, you could probably correctly put them in the cult status because they believed Ellen G. White brought Scripture. Well, if you're going to add to the Scriptures, I'm going to say that's kind of cultish. But nonetheless, not all of them hold that up as an important piece. But Seventh-day Adventists, they observed the Sabbath when they typically do the sun goes down, some of them do midnight, whatever. Work stops. We can't have family events and have my brother-in-law show up if he has to travel more than a certain distance because we don't do that. I can show up on Sunday, but he can't be there on Saturday because that's the seventh day, right? Another group that's out there, they're much smaller and probably not as strict, but very similar, are the Seventh-day Baptists. I don't know if you knew they existed. I didn't until I was getting ready for this, but but there are Seventh-day Baptists, and they tend to be the same thing, where they say, we're going to follow the Sabbath in very similar ways or exactly the same varying degrees of what we see in the Old Testament. We also have what we might call Christian Sabbatarians. This, by the way, is the view of the classic Reformed Church. Think of your Calvinists. Think of the first Reformer was Martin Luther and all that that came forward. They tended to say, well, yes, we have a day of rest, but it's on Sunday. The Puritans followed this pretty closely. Sunday, you didn't do stuff. I grew up under that in certain respects, not strict all the time, but my mother's dad, he had a partner that, he had a farm that he did, a buddy, farming buddy, they both had farms. They did a lot of things together, including harvest work. When the first field got ready, they'd both go harvest there, and then they'd go to the next one. Didn't matter who on the field, they would share the work. But my grandfather was, I'm not doing this on Sunday. And the other guy was, when the crops are ready to harvest, you harvest them. If God didn't want us to harvest on Sunday, he should have made them ripe on Saturday, okay? They didn't see eye to eye on this. It didn't create conflict, and every once in a while my grandfather would give in, and he always, at the end of the day, would say this. There might be a few exceptions, but I was very close to my grandfather, spent a lot of time with him. Most days, his combine broke down, he'd say, I knew I shouldn't have done this on Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay? So, was he correct? Well, probably the larger group would say, in today's world, that the observance of the Sabbath, like we see in the Old Testament, really doesn't apply to us. So let's continue to look into that. Let's not just set that aside. Now, we know that God didn't always feel particularly honored by what the Jews did. Look at Isaiah 1:13. You got that, Rick?
Bring no more vain offerings. Incense is an abomination to me. New moon and Sabbath and the calling of convocations I cannot endure. Iniquity and solemn assembly.
Okay, might be a little hard to understand, but Isaiah here is bringing the word to the people. God's done with you. He's tired with you, to the Israelite people, and you're going to have a tough time. You're going to have captivity. All this. And one of the things he says in there is he lists some things that you do, but I'm tired of it because you do it in iniquity. You don't do it from a pure heart with pure motives. And one of the things he mentions is observing the Sabbath.
Yeah.
Yep. And so there it is. That's the Israelite point made by God, that how you do it is at least as important as what you do. But let's go over to Luke chapter 5. I want to lay the stage for now after the time of Jesus and after. In Luke chapter 5, and we're not going to read the whole... Well, yes, we are going to read this one. In Luke chapter 5, verses 37 and 38, let's just read it.
No one puts new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins and it will be spilled, and the skins will be destroyed. The new wine must be put into fresh wineskins, and no one... after drinking old wine, desires new, for he says the old is good.
Okay, the last part I probably didn't intend to read, but let's go back to the new wine and old wineskins. What's Jesus' point here? What's he trying to teach? What is the new wine?
It's the new covenant.
The new covenant. What's the old wineskin? Well, it's the old covenant, but it's the practices of Judaism. The previous covenant is going away. It's going to end. And Jesus is simply saying, I'm not moving forward in the same way. If we think about what happened, what part of the Jewish worship practices was carried over from the Israelites to the Christian kingdom? in terms of formal worship? Did they have the temple? No temple. Now, they did worship in the temple. It was a common area. There were some commons areas that they could go worship. So they did some preaching and teaching in the temple, but did they make an annual trek to the temple?
No.
Sacrifices?
No.
Priests?
No.
You know, there were probably some really good priests, but when Jesus established the church through the 11 and then the 12 and then those that followed them, we didn't establish a priesthood that go between God and men. Why? We can read Hebrews. We have a royal priesthood. We have a priest above every priest, after the order of Melchizedek instead of after the order of Levi. And so God didn't choose to say, well, there's some good priests. We'll keep them and just get rid of the old ones. No. When Jesus implemented the church, it was a fresh start. And what kinds of things did Jesus do on the Sabbath? Everything. I mean, really, what did he not do on the Sabbath? How did that affect his relationship with the Jewish leaders? Matter of fact, the main one that was the final one that got him going was a healing he did on the Sabbath. And from that point forward, they were figuring out how to kill him. So I want to look at some verses. I want to go over to Hebrews chapter 4, verses 1 through 9. Now, Hebrews is a really cool place to go for this, because who is the book of the Hebrews written to? Jewish people who had claimed Christ but were missing their old Jewish life. And the whole book of Hebrews is talking about, are you going to trade Jesus as your high priest for those guys? Are you going to trade the salvation you have for animal sacrifice? Are you going backwards? Are you willing to do that? And this passage is very helpful. Let's read Hebrews 4, 1 through 9.
While the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear lest any of you should seem to have failed to reach it. For good news came to us just as to them, but the message they heard did not benefit them, because they were not united by faith with those who listened. For we who have believed enter that rest, as he has said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Although his works were finished from the foundation of the world, for he has somewhere spoken on the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this passage he said, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly received the good news failed to enter because of disobedience, again he appoints a certain day, today, saying through David so long afterward in the words already quoted, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God, for whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest, so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience.
So, what is that Sabbath day of rest mentioned in here?
Salvation.
Salvation. The language changes when we start talking about entering the rest of God when we get into the New Testament. And it's about salvation. It even talks about, in that passage, the one who enters the rest of God, his works are ended. What works are ended for the one who enters the Sabbath day of rest of God, according to Hebrews? What are the works it's talking about there?
Jesus. Labor.
What kind of labor?
Jesus.
The labor for righteousness. All those laws, which, of course, the Jewish leadership had compounded so greatly, they're not necessary anymore. You can't work your way into heaven. Quit trying. Once we understand what Christ has done, earning our salvation goes away because Jesus paid the price. It's done. Take your rest. And God, they're basically, he's saying here, don't go back into trying to work it. That didn't work. Now, we're not near done yet. I've got two more passages that we've got to get through. One is Romans 14, 5 through 9. So I have done a very brief, super brief job of saying the Sabbath day of rest that the Jews were asked to follow was ended. It was a relationship of remembrance, a sign between God and the descendants of Abraham and the people who came out of Egypt and their descendants. I may not have done an adequate job of showing how that comes to an end. I'll just make this broad statement. All of the other Ten Commandments are restated in some form. It may be don't hate, that's like murder, but they're restated in some form in the New Testament. Not observing the Sabbath, or observing the Sabbath is not re-mentioned in the New Testament in that form or another form. But let's talk about what that means, and this can get very clear by the time we're done. Let's start with Romans 14, 5 through 9.
One person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. For each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in the honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God, while the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord and gives thanks to God. For none of us lives to himself, and none of us dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. So that whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ died and lived again, that he might be Lord both of the dead and of the living.
Okay, so what's the point of Romans 14? Some esteem one day more than another. Some will eat these foods, others refuse to eat them. What is Paul saying? What's the point of this passage in Romans 14?
Don't keep judging each other.
Don't judge each other. If we were to say it from a different perspective, as long as my focus is worshiping the Lord and I understand the Lord Jesus Christ and I'm putting my faith in his work on the cross for my salvation, and I want to have my Sabbath on Saturday and not work because I think that honors God, that's fine to do it. We're not saying you can't do that. But Paul goes on to say, if they don't do that, if they don't see that as a need, that's okay. And we could talk about weak brother, stronger brother, and there's just a lot in Romans we don't have time to cover today about not judging one another. As a matter of fact, there's another passage that says, if my friend, my brother in Christ, has a hang-up, that's not the Romans word, but about eating meat sacrificed to idols, then don't eat meat in front of him. Don't create an obstacle. Don't make an issue of it. Let that stuff sort itself out in their conscience. Let them follow their conscience without talking down about one another. So Paul is kind of saying, you can do either one, it really doesn't matter, but certainly it's no requirement that you would esteem one day above another. He's much more clear in the book we just studied a while back, Colossians 2. Go to Colossians 2, 16 and 17. Now, let me give you a little bit of context. In Colossians 2, Paul is dealing with some early elements of Judaizers and some early elements of Gnostics. And so the context here is there are people from the outside that want to tell you because you don't behave in a certain way, you're all messed up. Here's Paul's answer to that. Colossians 2, 16 and 17.
Therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in question the food and drink or with regard to the festival or a new moon or a new Sabbath. These are shall of the things to come, but the substance belong to Christ.
Okay. So, don't let anyone act as your judge regarding fruit or drink or respect to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath day. We're no longer judged on those basis. Don't let outsiders push you into saying, I've got to do some sort of law-based response to God. Now, I already told you that the Ten Commandments, for example, get moved into the New Testament with the exception of the Sabbath day in various ways. Maybe not stated exactly the same, but, you know, it's not okay to go out and murder. That's very clear. It's not okay to steal. It's not okay to have idols. It's not okay. You can go down the list. But the Sabbath day was for the Jews. It didn't start until you get to the Jews. It is proclaimed by the word of God it was for the Jews, and its function was the sign of their covenant. May not be the only sign, but that was a sign for the covenant. And so where are we at? Let's bring this to a conclusion. In Genesis 2, we see that God took his rest as creator, and he blessed that day. There's really no other reason we can see in the world to have seven-day weeks. Nothing else happens in sevens, except in God's world, he has all kinds of sevens. That's one, not the only one, but it's a number of completion and wholeness. It isn't until we get into Exodus 20 in specific, that is established as a command for anybody. Now, does that mean that the Old Testament people prior to that didn't stop and honor God on the Sabbath or say, this is God's day of rest, or know it and remember it? No, I don't know. They may have done a lot of things to honor the Sabbath. But as a command, that's the first time it's given as a command to people in the world. And after Christ, and I'm going to say this very carefully. I want you to hear exactly what I say. It has no redeeming value. Now, I don't mean it's valueless to stop and observe the Sabbath. What I mean by redeeming is, as far as redemption in the eyes of God, it doesn't do anything. Okay, that's what I mean by redeeming value. You want to observe the Sabbath? Go for it. I've observed Passovers. It's very enlightening to observe a Passover and think about what happened on those days. I don't have any problem with observing Sabbaths. It doesn't make you a non-believer to observe a Sabbath. But it doesn't make you one of God's children to observe it either. Okay? So it's not a moral issue. Do what you want. It's not replaced by Sunday. Now, Sunday took on particular emphasis because it was the first day of the week. It was the day they recognized the resurrection, and it certainly looks like in the New Testament church it was a special day. But the Sabbath is not the sign of our covenant. Our covenant, the new covenant, what is the sign of our covenant?
Christ.
What is the event we do in remembrance of the covenant? Communion. The new covenant has its own sign of remembrance, thing we do to remember the covenant we have with Christ, and that's communion. Questions, comments?
In Psalm 118, verse 24, it's good because it says, this is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice in it.
Absolutely. And we should rejoice in that every day. Absolutely. Well, let me close with a word of prayer. Father, I know that as we talked about the Sabbath today, there's a lot of feelings, a lot of intuition out there about that role for us. Lord, let us not pass judgment on anybody over Sabbaths or other kinds of eating ideas or practices that some by their conscience follow. Let us not look down on that. Lord, let us instead, in our own lives and as we bring the good news to others, let it be the good news, the gospel, Lord, let us be effective in bringing to folks that message which redeems us from trying to earn salvation by our behaviors. Instead, Lord, let us place all our faith in Jesus Christ with great joy. And let us be very understanding of those around us and not superior, not condescending in any way about other practices. But let us always constantly point people to Jesus Christ. And it's in his name we pray. Amen.